Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Detroit Tiger fans, are you ready for the most exhilarating event of the summer? Get ready for the 6th annual Motor City Metrics MLB Draft Show. Hosted by your very own Chris Brown and Rogelio Castillo, we're exploring one of the deepest MLB drafts in recent memory. Who will rise from the pack? Will the Detroit Tigers secure an impact bat with their pick? This is the first draft in the Scott Harris era, and you don't want to miss it. Be part of the excitement and witness the future of baseball unfold on the Motor City Metrics MLB Draft Show. Join us Sunday, July 9th. On the Motor City Metrics YouTube channel and the Tiger Miley Report YouTube channel for the first round of coverage.
All right. Hey, welcome anybody and everybody who's listening right now. I already see we got a $5 donation from Blood Red already and a $50 donation from Elton, which is amazing. Thank you so much, guys. It is another episode of the Tigers Miley Report. It's an interesting one so far as Rogelio is driving back from parts unknown up north in Michigan. He may join us tonight. He may not. I'm not sure. Jerry was going to join us, but he had something come up at work. And we're supposed to be joined by Brian Sikowski, the national cross-checker from Perfect Game. We're going to talk a little draft tonight, somebody who really knows the insides and outs of the draft. But he hasn't shown up yet. So right now it's just me and you guys. And you know, as soon as I see that, I see a bunch of eyeballs leave, which shows us who's watching and who isn't. But yeah, happy, first of all, happy Father's Day to anybody and everybody out there who is a father or got to spend time with their father or misses their father or any of that. We appreciate you spending some time with us. I hope everybody got a chance to be with their family today if they could. I will tell you from my side of things, we got to, it was pretty nice. My dad's still with us. He's 73, still going strong. And, we got to meet for brunch this morning with him. And my brother has basically a starting hockey team in terms of his kids. He's got six kids. Only three of them made it. But with those three kids and his wife and me and two members of my family, we had to, it was an 11-person table. They had to put us in a conference room. It was like we were finishing a business deal instead of eating brunch. But it was still fun. It was good to be with everybody. And then, you know, my family came back here to the house to swim a little bit. It's a beautiful day here in Michigan. So pretty good Father's Day, all things considered, I think. I hope everybody else had a good one, too. I don't know if it's going to be a solo show. We'll see. Hopefully, we'll get the people to show up. But if not, we're going to talk. Oh, and there's Brian Sikowski joining us right now. Brian?
Hello.
Hello, Brian.
Thank you. Welcome, et cetera. Happy to be here.
Yeah. You hear me all right?
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, how'd you do? How you doing on Father's Day today?
Father's Day was all right. We were in Michigan hanging out with her, Marissa's dad. So just busted ass back down the turnpike and walked in the house and ready to rock and roll here.
Yeah, appreciate you. You taking your time out. I know I got I had the Florida game, Florida taking care of business against Oral Roberts right behind me going down. Hurston Waldrop, man, I think people who knew that he was capable of this sort of stuff, but he's really probably pushing himself up. Wouldn't shock anybody, I think, if he's the number two pitcher on the board now.
Yeah, it's him or Lauder. We'll see Dolander, you know, soon again anyway. So those three, you're going to be one of those three.
Oh, Brian, watching your whole 1 hour mock draft for Perfect Game. Great content, as always. Brian Sikowski. Yes, he is the national cross-checker for Perfect Game, of course, if you don't know. And so you see it there, at Brian Sikowski, PG. Couple underscores in there.
Couple of them.
Please follow him if you don't already, but I can't imagine anybody here who doesn't, but we typically run through the minor leagues when we do these shows, but I'm not going to put you through all that. We'll just get right to the draft when we start here. I imagine we're going to get some people peppering in questions from the chat. I'll try to work those in, but let's not overrun Brian with too many questions today, if you guys don't mind. I really appreciate you joining us. Hopefully Raj will hop on at some point, but he's somewhere between Oscoda and Dearborn. I don't know. As I was saying, you know, we got the College World Series going on right now, which is just one of the best events in all sports, even if you even people who don't really like baseball, it's still pretty awesome to see this kind of action up in Omaha. But and one cool thing about this year is like two thirds of, I don't know, the top 15 players in the college ranks this year are there in Omaha. So we're getting to see a lot of them. And so, yeah, it's been awfully fun so far.
That's the transfer portal in action, man. Like, that's only going to get more condensed as we go on. You know, like, it's not going to happen 100% of the time, but we're at a place where, like, if you're really good at a mid-major as a freshman, you're not going to be there anymore, you know? And, like, it's kind of – I look at that as you know, bad. I'm a mid-major guy, but, like, I'm team portal because I'm team in favor of an athlete, like, having control over their own career, you know? But at the same time, it's like, man, that sucks for – and I'll just insert a school here. That sucks for Eastern Michigan, who identifies a guy no one else is on that they've evaluated, and they offer him a scholarship, and they get him to campus, and they sign that guy, and they develop him, and bam, he has a great freshman year, and now he's with Kentucky or something. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a bummer. It really is.
Well, we did two names we mentioned, right? Waldrop and Dollander, weren't they both at Southern Miss?
Waldrop was at Southern Miss. Dollander was at South Georgia or Georgia Southern. Whatever. Georgia Southern. Yeah.
Schools with Southern in their name. I can't keep
it. Yeah. But, yep. Georgia Southern.
You come out and you blow up, and it's not rare for a freshman to blow up. Sometimes guys just grow into their bodies. It's the Verlander or whatever, you know, like he was like 88 as a high school senior, and he's 99 as a freshman. But yeah, that is a bummer. But then, you know, there's some really unique portal stories, like the kid, I'm forgetting his name, the kid who was at Purdue, the lefty.
Joe Whitman.
And then, hopped over to Kent State, which is not, I don't think that's really, you know, moving up in the world, but suddenly he just got put everything together and he's blown up this year. So it's good for guys like that. Yeah.
And now he might be a first rounder. Like Whitman might be a first rounder.
I heard he's doing pretty well out in the Cape, right? Which is another interesting wrinkle in the last couple of years where you can go to the Cape before the draft.
he's already done on the Cape. Like I know his agent pretty well. He threw once, was unbelievably good, and was like, see you at the combine, fellas, or whatever it was. Like
pulled the George Costanza.
Absolutely.
The combine I think comes up this week. I don't know. Is it in Arizona? I think
it's in Arizona. Yeah. It's at Chase Field. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if you would have any reason to go out there. There's probably all sorts of prep stuff happening too.
I'll be at Chase in 2 weeks anyways, or 3 weeks anyways, because that's what we're doing PG National this year. So
nice.
We'll be out there anyways.
Yeah, somebody in our Discord was talking about they saw a bunch of kids playing at down at Roger Dean in Jupiter, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. Underclassmen, I don't know what's happening, but there's always stuff going on down there.
There's plenty of upperclass going on right now. It's like it's only up here where high school just ended. You know, a lot of the rest of the country has been playing travel ball for 3 weeks already. So,
it really doesn't ever stop, man. Like no. When I was a kid, I don't remember travel baseball being much of a thing at all, but
it wasn't when I was a kid. I'm, you know, you're not much older than me, but you're older than me. Like we're working our way back. It's been the last 10 years that it's become you know, what it is now.
One of my son's best friends, he's nine, just went down to Indiana for a baseball tournament this weekend. They played, they won a couple times. They had the finals today in Indiana, lost to the best team in Indiana.
Sure.
Yeah, they're nine. He's playing up like they're, you know, 10-year-old, but still, it's been a while. But I don't know. Just sound like an old man, I guess, talking about stuff like that.
Me too.
Identifying these kids. They do it in Europe. They've been doing it in Europe for years, right, for the soccer players. Like, they get these kids immediately when they're like, you know, like, oh, he's got a future. And they do it because it's probably worth something to him. But in any event, I guess we can, you know, you were on Days of Roar podcast with Mark and Evan the other day. That was great. And, you know, we always love having you on. And one thing I wanted to do, we have to touch on the top of the guys because the Tigers have the top of the class. Tigers have the third pick. We got to touch on them. But
of course,
you know so much and your depth and breadth of knowledge is this. That one of the things I wanted to focus on after that was kind of, it feels like a really deep infield class, particularly with prep infielders. It reminds me a little bit of a couple of years ago, 21, I think it was, without the high end of Marcelo Meyer and Jordan Lawler, but still, like, you know, that class was super deep with guys like Carson Williams and Jackson Merrill and Max Muncy and Isaac Pacheco and all those dudes. And it reminds me of that a little bit. So we have no idea if the Tigers are going to take high schoolers in that, you know, second, third pick, but I figured that seems to be like a strength of the class. So we'll dip into that a little bit after this. But since the Tigers have a top three pick, we got to discuss those top three guys. And we'll start tippy top, I guess, with Dylan Cruz. What do you think of him?
Hey, man, I think he's really good. There we go. And signing off, thanks for having me. Like, yeah, it's but he's it's so hard in any sport to go wire to wire in a cycle as the guy, you know. Yeah. Everybody's got the guy for the next NFL draft. It's Caleb, whoever it is, Caleb Williams. Everyone's got the guy for the next NBA draft on the eve of the draft before it. You know, we always have the year, 2 years out, whatever. It's really hard to go from that point to the draft the following year and just have one guy be the guy the whole time. The only other time it's happened in my career was Rutschman. So, yeah. You know, and like that was a draft class that had Bobby Witt and Riley Green and so many other talented players like Corbin Carroll, you know, whatever it was. Yeah. And Rutschman went wire to wire as number one. This is the dude. It didn't happen with Torque. It didn't happen with Mize. It didn't happen with, you know, any of the other guys in between. This year, though, it's been Dylan Cruz at the top of the 23 class since he said he was not going to be in the draft in like March of 2020. Yeah. You know, so it's been over 3 years that this guy has been the guy. And when you're the guy, you are under the biggest microscope possible. We are looking for any reason at all to ding you. We're trying to find some reason to say that you're not as good as we thought you were 6 months ago or whatever. I'm still looking.
I'm still yeah, looking. That's, you know, it's funny. I remember going and looking because they said, I think the first college home run for Dylan Cruz was off Paul Skeens.
Paul Skeens, yeah.
When he was with Air Force. Yeah. And you can see a comment right under that in the first video. And it's from Alex Bregman. And it says, 1-1-2023. It's like, hey, that's fun all yep. around. You know, I mean, guys like you who are like in the business and you do this for a living don't typically like to make comps because you know that it's a foolish game or whatever and there's lots of bad things, but you probably hear a lot of comps. And that's one of the strange things. I can't think of many comps for Dylan Cruz. It's I don't know why, but
I haven't heard one.
It's a real, yeah, that's, I don't think it's going to scare anybody, but it's just like, huh. Who is this?
You got to start when you're talking about a guy that the top of the class, like let's start with what he can't do because that list is going to be a lot shorter than what we think he can do. Right.
There you go.
What can't Dylan Cruz do? Probably not in like a seven glove in center. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't hit 40 bombs a year.
Yeah.
End of list.
Well, yeah, I guess you would also probably also not gonna steal you like 30 or 40
right. bags. Okay. Whatever, yep. You're right. Yep. That's one I forgot. Probably not gonna steal 30 plus bags. Probably not gonna steal 20 plus bags. We can even go there.
But yeah, a little bit of everything else. Sticking at center, at least in pro ball, they're gonna try him, right? He may end up in org with a better defensive center fielder, but he can play it.
Yep.
They said the same thing about Riley Green, right? Like he's gonna have to move to a corner and like, hey, just keep playing him.
I thought I'll comp to that too. Like I thought Riley would have to move to a corner too. I said in fairness, like down the road, but I still thought like he's been better than I even thought he was going to be just defensively. But
So with him though, it was also the size, right? He was like 6'3" and you're like, oh, he's going to grow and get a big donkey of a dude and hit a bunch of home runs. But he's credit to him for staying in you know, shape enough to play center field.
No doubt.
Yeah, so Cruz, you know, it seems like there's basically two scenarios. Cruz goes one, or the Pirates try to do something fun with money.
Right.
And I don't even really want to like speculate about it all because who the hell knows? But it feels like you said, he's wire to wire, been the guy forever. If you're the Pirates, just take the guy, right? It seems like they have the bonus pools are so enormous now in the top overall pick. You don't have to give them. I mean, I'm sure the agent will push for as much as possible, but you can give him more than Torque. Give him more than whoever had the highest. And I think you can both be happy with that. You still have some money left over. We know the Pirates like to play around with the money, but.
Yep. Speaking of that, Henry Davis, big leaguer today, right? Speaking of
that's right. Money, yeah. Promoted. Good we, I was just, Raj and I went up to Erie for their first home series, and they were playing at that time Altoona. Mm-hmm. Altoona was just chock full of, it was weird. There were like a bunch of 30-year-olds on the team, and the double, like Domingo Leyva was on that team. Former Whoa. Tigers great.
It's a name for the past. Yeah.
But yeah. So they had Henry Davis. They had him catch. He caught all of the night game. And then the next day he caught 8 innings of a blowout day game. And I was like, wow, they're really, you know, working him hard, trying to his catching, and his catching was okay.
Yeah.
He's just like, what stands out, we're sitting right behind home plate, and he's just 1,000% muscle. His legs were like bursting out of his pants. I'm like, oh man. And so, yeah, they've been playing him in the outfield a lot. And I think they just really want, you know, I'm sure they'll catch him a little bit, but they just want the bat. And I don't blame him, because it's a pretty good bat. It's really patient, lots of power. I don't know if he's going to hit 280 or whatever, but I think he'll hit enough. So yeah, that's cool. First overall pick, making it up in 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years.
That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
You know, like how it's kind of how it should go. You take a college guy first, he should be ready pretty quick. You know,
yeah, that's the hope.
Yeah.
All right, so we can move on from Dylan Cruz. He's really good.
He's really good.
We'll quote you on that. You know, a lot of people got to see Paul Skene's pitch yesterday, which is, when you watch him, you're like, oh boy, I really like, I wouldn't mind having that guy. But yeah, he's just, you know, just sitting 99. Yeah. Like, I'll bump it up to 102.
He threw 46 pitches of 100 or more. Like, he sat 100. The averages are, he sat 99.6 or whatever. Like, he sat 100 for a start. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely insane. Like, there are a handful of pitchers in the world, right? Like, like Hunter Green and like maybe Ohtani and Roki Sasaki. And
that's it. There's
DeGrom, the hopefully DeGrom maybe, but yeah. You know, and I find myself getting greedy as watching him. Like, I'd really like to see him throw a slider here. Let's see that change up. But then I go, oh no, just throw 100 and get out of this and win for your team.
Dot 101. Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things with him, is it just seems so free and easy. Like, you see some guys throwing 100, like, yeah, I get it, because you're throwing your entire body into it. And this is just a big dude who's under control and throwing. So I know it's one of those things, like, it seems like he's been attached to the Nats for a long time in this draft. Just, you know, he gets the Strasburg comps, and it's like, the Nats probably need some pitching help. But, I don't know. We hear those rumors, though, that if he doesn't go in the top two, that the Tigers might pass on him anyway, because I guess they don't. I mean, that's the knock on anybody, right? Is he's just a pitcher. Like,
he's a pitcher.
Yeah. And we've seen what happened with, like Strasburg, right? Greatest pitching prospect of all time. Had a couple really high highs. You know, World Series MVP, I think he was, wasn't he? Yep. And still had a solid career, but a lot of injuries, and who knows if he's ever coming back now. It doesn't sound good, which is a real bummer. I don't know. I don't think the Nats regret that pick.
No. I saw this. I think Carlos Collazo was actually the one who put it on Twitter a couple of days ago or something. Like, someone commented, we were talking about Skene's and the risk and blah, 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 blah. And someone said something like, well, you know, the Nationals have to regret what they did, given that Strasburg didn't give them any longevity. And I'm pretty sure it was Carlos who was like, well, I mean, I don't know, like 5 top 3 Cy Young award years plus a Cy Young plus, you know, a World Series plus. I'd imagine he, like, that's pretty good, you know.
they may regret the extension they gave
him. But that's not what we're talking about.
No, overall, that's one of the better first overall picks of all time, really. I mean, people just have these sky-high expectations for who the first overall pick is going to be, or and a guy with that much hype. But, yeah, I think you take, if you're the Tigers and you said you're going to get exactly what Strasburg did for the Nats, you're going to get from Skene's, I think they go, okay.
Great. But, oh, we have an ace for, like, the next 6 years? Dope. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But you get the feeling that Scott Harris and company, they probably have basically just an aversion to taking any arm. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's kind of like that money ball thing. Like, do we believe in this or not? Are we going to make a special exception for this guy because he looks so good? Or are we just going to stick to this and not take a picture up top? I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it does feel like he's probably not going to the Tigers.
Right.
So that, which brings us to Wyatt Langford, who is, I think, kind of the guy that Tigers fans have been circling for most of the process, because he's been that third guy for most of the process. But boy, he's pretty good too.
Yeah, he is. You could make the argument that he'll flash you tools that are louder than that of Cruz. Like, he'll hit balls farther and run faster than Cruz in terms of sprint speed. Now, does that apply in any sort of, like, tangible production way? I don't know. Maybe. Like maybe Langford's a guy who's going to steal a few more bases than Cruz, but I think they have similar chances to play center. And yeah. Langford's the one who's not playing center in pro ball right now, like, or excuse me, in college ball. Cruz has played every day in center field for 3 years or whatever. Langford would need to make that switch.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where it's you assume that he's going to get tried in pro ball at center for a while, but it's maybe one of those things where like, hey, you know what? Eventually, we know he can play the corner. Yeah. The bat is coming along fine. Let's not, you know, go through the growing pains of playing center. It behooves the team to try, but you do have to wonder, like, all right, why is he not playing center in college? Mm-hmm. You know, Florida has tons of talent. They've got, is it Robertson, I think, this year, and before that was Fabian. So really good center fielders, but you'd think they'd try him. He's played a handful of games on center this year, but he's mostly hitting left and doing fine. But yeah, like the hit, the power, the speed, they're all pretty enticing there.
Yeah.
And now he's a guy that I kind of forced a Randy Arozarena comp on him. I was like, okay, I can figure out a comp here. Like just a really tooled up guy who, for whatever reason, isn't playing in center.
Yeah.
But he'll go out there and hit you 20 plus bombs and maybe steal you 20 bases if he gets it. That's the other thing. Like the speed's there, but he hasn't really been using it on the base path. And I don't know if that's instincts or if it's, you know, Sully and the boys kind of just holding him back a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think the common refrain you hear, right, is that in a normal year, you know, he might go 1-1. It just so happens that there's two, you know, players of the decade right ahead of him. So
you're right. It speaks to the class, like the top half of the class, or not even the top half, the top tier of the class. We're talking about multiple guys who, well, in a different year, we'd be 1-1. Like, okay, good. Like we're starting in a good spot. You know, when we're talking about the class at large, but I mean, I think like right now it's June 18th. I might feel differently in 3 weeks or whatever, you know, depending on how the chatter goes and whatever, but I would be really surprised if it doesn't go Cruz Skeens right now. And then Tigers should have their pick of Langford or if they want to be weird, you know, that should be what's going to like, that's the most likely outcome right now anyways.
Yeah. No, there, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about them. You know, the brass is on hand to watch Kyle Thiel a couple times, the catcher from Virginia, and he's a really good player, really good prospect, but it does feel like if they did that, boy, that's awfully risky. I mean, it's all, you know, whatever, everything's risky, but they'd be doing that to really play some games with the money, which is always a bit of a gamble. Although, and maybe we can use this to roll into the next section. We could talk on Max Clark, Walker Jenkins, Kyle Thiel, all that stuff, but and you know, people can hear that from you. You're going to get asked that 1,000 times before the draft starts, I think. So just look for Brian on other podcasts and you'll hear it.
Max Clark is really good. So is Walker.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. They're both a normal draft. They might, you know, go top overall. But the Tigers also pick, I believe, 37th and 45th. And as I was mentioning earlier, this seems like a really strong class for kind of prep infielders.
Yes.
Maybe even college infielders too, to be honest. So I was just curious if, you know, I had written down a whole bunch of names that I thought might be there in that range. You never know the bonus pools and who's got what demands or whatever. But so I don't know if I'll throw out some names for you and see if you can comment on them. And then at the end, I'll let you know, mention some guys that you might want to. So we'll start with Colt Emerson out of Ohio. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about him?
Not going to be there.
Fair enough. Gotcha.
I say that. I love Colt Emerson, man.
Cover my bases.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. I wish he was. I hope if they get weird at three, then that's the guy they float. Like, you know, I think he can really hit. It's a good left-handed swing. He uses the whole field. Saw him start to come into some power last summer with Wood, which was one of the things we were wanting to see, obviously. Maybe not a shortstop. More of like a smooth mover than he is like twitchy, you know, lateral agility like that. I think maybe third or second is more likely, but really like the left-handed bat. He's hit along every stop of the way. He's a Team USA guy. Like he's played on all these high-profile things and hit when he's done so. So if he were a grade more athletic, we'd have to be talking about him in the top 10, top 15 picks. But because of, okay, well, maybe he's not a shortstop, then a little bit down the board, but really confident in the hit tool there.
Yeah, and teams take hitters pretty quickly. Like some of these names are, like you said, they're probably not going to be there. I know George Lombard Jr. has been climbing up boards.
Yep.
Now the Tigers have an in there, possibly.
They do.
But what can you tell us about him?
That's a name I would keep in the back of your mind. at 37 or 45. Like, just literally would. It makes a lot of sense given the connections. And George Lombard Jr. is also a pretty good controller of the strike zone. So it makes sense in terms of profile too. And, you know, that's the range too for him too, in that range. So he had one of the best, like, 3-day playoff stretches at the WWBA I've ever seen last summer. And, like, I know that that doesn't make a player, but he was like 11 for 12 across three games with like 4 doubles, 3 triples, 3 bombs and like 4 walks. And it was a little bit of a smaller park. You know, some of the pitching he saw in those games weren't fantastic. There's a lot of mitigating factors there, but like, to watch a dude have a heater like that for 3 days is, it's tough to get out of your head. And so, like, I think athlete up the middle somewhere, chance at short, good chance at short, with good feel to hit. And it's, you know, the power is not quite there yet, but I think he's got the body for it. I think it'll come. He's got a younger brother who's really good too, who's bigger than he is. Yeah, 2026 kid. So, like, and obviously, like, you look at Dad, you know, going to have some power in that frame at some point or another. So I would watch that one closely at one of their next two picks.
Yeah, that's exciting for Tigers fans. Just kind of hope that they say, like, yeah, we're not signing anywhere but Detroit. But
right.
Who knows? Let's see who else we got. Let's go with Rock. I assume it's Rock.
Rock Chalowski. Yeah. Son of a scout. His dad's an area guy out in the Four Corners. Has the, like, you'd say son of a coach normally, but he kind of has that, like, advanced feel for the game that, like, son of a coach would have. So it's son of a scout. It's the same thing for me, but, yeah, really good defender, like a high level defender. It's not, there's not a lot of juice there yet. He's kind of still long and lanky in terms of his build. I wouldn't call him skinny, but lanky still. But yeah, it's talented up the middle. I think he's a shortstop for sure long term. It's solid hit tool right now, but it's more of a, like, you're kind of projecting on the bat a little further out than you would with some guys, just because you're not really seeing the impact yet. But he's got the frame to come into some more strength. He's got the swing path that would tell me that he's going to be able to drive some balls out eventually. But right now it's very much like singles over the infielder's heads on a, which is not bad. I'm not criticizing that, but, you know, once we start seeing him backspin some balls out and this, that, and the other thing, then we can be more confident on the power. But yeah, man, I don't know if he's going to sign. I think that one's going to be a pretty tough sign, but either way, like, talented glove, infielder with some pedigree, think it would be a good pick in that range.
I'm looking to see where he's committed to. UCLA.
Yeah,
sometimes they get their guys. Sometimes they get their guys. Let's see. Well, so here's a kid that you've seen him in a couple of mocks to Detroit just because of the ring. Walker Martin out of Colorado was a bigger hitter, I would think, or early, taller.
Yeah, tall. Yeah, he's a big dude. Yeah. He's also a really freaky athlete. He's like one of the maybe the highest testing load and sports athlete for a player of his build. They break, when they do their testing, they break you down by build. So, like, large, skinny, large, whatever it is, there's a lot of different categories. So for his, he's like off the charts in terms of his athletic ability. He's old for the class. So we'll find out if that matters to Harris or not. I don't know if it will, but he's notably old for the class, but it's huge left-handed power with athleticism. And he's a big dude. You know, maybe he's big enough to where or maybe he's athletic enough to where his size will still allow him to play short. Think it's probably a third baseman either way, but left-handed hitting third baseman with power, man. Like, you know, I'm trying to compare to recent Tigers drafts. Like, that's the Pacheco profile, right? Gotcha. Martin's a better athlete with more production, more now production. Yeah.
It's enticing. He was a guy who kind of, I don't know if he popped up this year, but he's definitely been like a riser, it seems like.
Last summer was his kind of like, oh, what do we got here? You know, like, once the testing started coming out with him, like, once teams started to realize that even with the on-field tools, there's this underlying stuff going on with him that works in his favor. And then he hit like 22 bombs this year in high school baseball or something ridiculous like that. So yeah, it's been a steady rise for him over the last year or so.
He went out and had a Kristen Stewart high school
super casual.
And then another guy that's I think has been rising a little bit, but maybe I'm mistaken, is Sammy Stepura. Is he from New York?
Yep.
Like, they usually that's not shocking. Usually there's a guy from the north who kind of pops up,
right?
Senior
year. There's a bunch of arms up there too that are popping up or have popped up now that
Noth,
it's
or whatever.
Noth and Echeverria. but Hero Wyatt in Connecticut. But anyway, Sammy, I big fan of Sammy too. He's such an easy mover, man. Like one of those dudes you just watch him take infield and you're like, okay, like this is an athlete who belongs on this field here. You know, he was a guy who really blew up in Jupiter, had a solid but not like standout summer leading up to that. Was in Jupiter with the I remember the combo team who won, the teams that joined together, and was playing short. I think he played a little second base. Him and AJ Ewing were up the middle on the same team. But yeah, man, like really like the athleticism, really like the hands, like the way the feet work, has the arm strength to play short. I like the swing better than other guys do. There's some who say it's not that great of a swing. I think it's awesome. Power is there. It's more of a power over hit right now, which is not necessarily a bad thing because I think there's hit there too. It's just this spring he put more of an emphasis on driving balls out to try and get more attention, I think. But yeah, man, he's really good too. You're going to hear me say he's really good. This is a very strong prep infield class. Like I've said this on a bunch of different podcasts, like the strength of this class is the top tier and then it's prep bats, you know.
Yeah, and so like, you know, I'm using you as a terrific resource for this because you know you're one of the best there is, but it's yeah, you know, like you know, the Tigers might go out and take three college bats.
We don't know.
They might go they might go take two prep pitchers afterward. I don't know. I just figured it was the strength of the class, so I hit you with it. There was another kind of a mover upwards early in the season. He's a Florida kid that we talked about back in the day, like 3 months ago. In Adrian Santana. I haven't really kept up with see if he stayed on that plane or what's going on with him.
Yeah, still the kind of the exact opposite of Walker Martin. He's super young for the grade. He's smaller, kind of a slender kid. Really good athlete who is unquestionably a shortstop. Probably the best infield glove in the prep class, I would say. Really good shortstop, really good hands, really good short area quickness. The arm is plus. It was a light stick last summer. Mm-hmm. It was a light stick. It was not that he struggled to make contact. It was that he struggled to make impactful contact. It wasn't an overwhelming amount of swing and miss or anything like that. It was just a lot of choppers, you know. Mm-hmm. And so this spring, and he does play at a little bit of a smaller high school field, so the home run numbers were a little bit inflated. But even aside from that, was getting the ball in the air more, was doing so with backspin, was kind of getting the barrel out in a way we hadn't seen before, was driving balls pole side, was putting balls up the opposite field gap. So even if you say, oh, well, he hit 9 home runs, it really would have been 7, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like the results were different, and that's kind of what we were looking for anyways. So I would imagine that his pre-draft workouts with teams where they're going to get him on TrackMan and see what the exit data really looks like right now, like that's what's going to determine where he goes. But it may be as high as 20, and then it could be into this range that we're talking about with the Tigers. He's kind of all over the board, but his age really, like, he's going to be 17 and for a while after the draft. So, like, that, you know, shoot that guy up probably.
Feels like a classic Cleveland pick from last couple years. Yeah.
Sure does.
He's a switch hitter too, right? Yeah. So, like the versatility there. All right, we got a couple more here. Cooper Pratt from Mississippi, I believe, and then Eric Patonte from California.
I think you can wipe Pratt off the board, man. I've heard he is going to school. You know, I don't think he's pulled his name out or anything like that, but like, dude from Oxford, Mississippi, like he's going to play at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
You know, we can write that one down. Gray Kessinger, Thomas Dillard of old high school guys who had some hype, but they went to Oxford High School, so they were going to school, man. I like Pratt a lot. He's kind of like been put out of my mind a little bit just because he's going to go to school. But Batanti, another one, an interesting one. He's a very polarizing one. He's one that nobody seems to have a real strong, like, I'm right opinion about on that guy. It's been inconsistent. It's been up and down. When it flashes, it's a gorgeous Adonis looking young for the grade, left-handed hitting third baseman who is an athlete with arm strength and monster juice. That goes away for long stretches though. So, you know, it's kind of your typical hit or miss young raw high school guy, but like it's left-handed hitting third baseman with athleticism and power, and he's young and he's big and like so many things you want to love there. But if I were returning in a report to the team, I'd be like, I need to see this guy go to college or something like that.
Yeah, I think I was watching just a couple weeks ago. I was watching the All-American game, and I thought he played pretty well in that, which is always leaves an impression. But then, yeah, like, you know, the scouts are actually out there watching him at every event instead of just the one on TV.
He's uber talented, man. Like, there's no denying that. It's there's so many boxes that are just like, oh, check, you know. And it's like it's really only if you watch him for extended periods of time where you're like, okay, well, you know, this is maybe a little bit rawer than I thought it was or something like that. But that's not to say he won't be an all-star. I'm less sure on that one is all.
Gotcha. So, yeah, I mean, that was like kind of the handful of guys I had picked out for you. But I don't know if there's anybody that I failed to mention, anybody you think is worth mentioning in that kind of phylum of draft prospects.
Let me pull up the old board here, see what we got far as guys who
there's that might be Zanatello kid with this, like the more Z's in his name than
He's a third baseman, I think, or maybe a center fielder. Really good athlete, had a big spring, did a lot of the things we were waiting for him to see, or we were waiting to see from him, excuse me, this spring, in terms of the power and the consistency at bat, in terms of making hard contact. So he's flying up in a big way. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in that range right around where the Tigers are. Miles Naylor is another one maybe to talk about. Canadian kid, obviously the brother of Josh and Bo. Very different player from the other two. This guy's a shortstop. He's a right-handed hitting shortstop. So he's, shockingly different than his brothers. But it's similar, like massive juice. I was up in Ontario about a month ago to watch a bunch of those guys play, and he hit a ball, one of the furthest home runs I've ever seen any amateur hit, like inclusive of college. Just 480 feet, like onto a berm or something ridiculous. You know, I've seen him enough to be confident in the fact that I think he's going to hit. I don't know how much, probably third base for me, because it's a seven arm when he lets it rip too.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, you could put that one in there too. I think he's all over the place in terms of his range. He's another one of those guys where the private workouts have gone extremely well. Like the exit data is off the charts. So he's kind of behind the scenes a little bit climbing up.
Nice.
But yeah, just wanted to throw that name in there too.
That's a good one because I haven't really paid much attention. Now we went and saw Denzel Clark a bunch last year, who I think is a Naylor cousin.
Yeah, something like that.
Like,
yeah.
Like, oh man, look at this dude.
Ontario Blue Jays stick together, man. Like, yeah, it's
yeah. So that's good athletes. I appreciate it. There's you know, 1,000 players we can mention, but one thing I did want to let you do, because I know how much you love JUCO guys.
Hell yeah.
Give me some of your favorite JUCO players in this draft, and then I'll let you go.
Christian Apor, we gotta talk about him.
Sounds familiar to me.
He's draft and follow guy last year from Oakland, who is now too good to sign for what the draft and follow would let him sign for. So he's going to, I would imagine, go back into the draft and be eligible again this year. Went to Gulf Coast State. He's a freshman. It is very, very raw, but he's still just 18. Like, he's young. He was a year young for the grade out of high school. It's like up to 98, left-handed, super, super easy. If you remember Antoine Kelly from Wabash a couple years ago, who was a second rounder, Brewers, I think, took him.
Yep.
Big, tall lefty, JUCO arm.
Yep.
It's kind of similar. It's different operationally. It doesn't look the same, but it's similar in terms of, like, JUCO dude, does it super easy, huge fastball, like very crude. So it's a big arm. I'd love to get into the Tiger system. I really would, but I don't know how much they're going to pay for that amount of rawness and that amount of limited strike throwing at times too. So, but got to mention him. You got to mention Sam Antonacci. He's a shortstop from Heartland. Antonacci. That's right.
Wait, Heartland. Where is that?
Illinois.
All right. Gotcha, sir.
Yep. Heartland in Illinois. Not Heartland, Michigan.
Fair enough.
D1 softball state champions. I saw. Shouts out to Heartland. but yeah, it's, who are we talking about? I think I just lost to talking about Heartland.
Antonacci.
Excuse me. Yeah, he's probably the best JUCO bat in this class. And JUCO bats are historically very, very tough to evaluate because you can evaluate a JUCO pitcher on his data, and it's really hard to evaluate a JUCO hitter on his data because he may see one good pitcher all year. But he's doing well. I think he's on the Cape, and I think he's playing well there. It's maybe not a shortstop, but really, really excellent hitting tools. He runs, he steals bases, he's, you know, it could be a guy. Committed to Coastal Carolina. If he goes there and blows up, then he'll be a second rounder next year or whatever. But Yeah, I mean, those two, like, it's not a huge year for JC. The portal has kind of killed the first rounder JUCO guy, I think, for the time being anyways. I think the portal's kind of killed that. You won't see Jackson Rutledge happen in the edge of the portal.
Just saw him pitching for or against Erie yesterday.
How's he look?
2 days ago. Colt Keith took him deep. So,
hell yeah.
But other than that, he was all right.
Still huge.
Yeah. So, yeah, I Brian, I appreciate it. There were a couple questions in chat. I've been kind of pushing them off to the side, but I'll get to them now if you don't mind.
No.
Not please. A ton, but it was like Dan wanted to know if Langford is a better hitter than Kyle Teal.
Is Wyatt Langford a better hitter than Kyle Teal? I would say that Kyle Teal has a slightly better hit tool, but I would say that Wyatt Langford is significantly more overall offensively impactful. That's my answer.
There you go. Higher OPS, more power, basically.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And he's, you know, he's a bigger, more muscular dude. I think he's kind of more like lithe and athletic. Trying to see if there was any. I think that might actually have been it in the chat. I'm looking.
Shouts out to Dan.
Lots of comments. Please ask Brian to compare Langford and Teal as hitters. Oh, he just did it.
Teal's left-handed, gap-to-gap, high-contact guy, knows the zone. Langford is not a free swinger or anything, but like will swing and miss a little bit more than Teal. But Langford hits the ball way further and way harder more often.
So we got a question from Connor. He said, where are Purify and Service going in the draft?
I don't think either. I just off the top of my head, like I think that both are going to go to school. Jaron had a great spring. Well, they both had great springs, first of all, but Jaron kind of answered some questions that we had, like, young kid, athlete, plays shortstop, really good defender, hit tool, blah, 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 blah. Need to see him get better, need bigger, need to see him get stronger, need to see him hit more balls out. Did those things. Had a good spring. I think he hit 8 or 9 bombs this spring. Was hitting balls harder than I've ever seen him hit before, which is what you're supposed to do. And, I think he's probably going to end up in school. I don't know if anybody has him in a high enough range for him to want to sign in that range. And Service, too. Like, he's going to go to Texas. Like, I don't know if Service – they've both been turned in. I just don't know if anybody's turned them in high enough to where it would make sense for them to not go to Clemson or Texas. That's all. But Service, first – I was there for his first at-bat of the year. He hit a ball 400 feet to the parking lot at St. Mary's on the very first pitch – on the very first pitch he saw of the season. And he had a good year too, man, like has made real improvements behind the plate. He's always been a good athlete, but now he's kind of channeling that athleticism better behind the plate now that he's gotten more confident back there and had more reps and throws well. And that power showed up in a big way this spring. I think he's got to get better at hitting breaking balls, but so does every high school player. But I love them both. I think they're both really good.
Yeah, and for people who don't know what we're talking about here, it's Jaron Purifies from what, Liggett, I think?
They're both Liggett guys.
Yep. Oh, okay, both Liggett. Yeah, which you're the upsets in Michigan, high school Michigan baseball, right?
So many.
Yeah.
They broke the streak. They broke the St. Mary's streak, ended it, and then did not have a great regular season because they play in that Catholic League. So, you know, unless you're world beaters, you're going to lose a bunch of regular season games, and they did. But then they marched all the way through the state playoffs to get to the state championship game in Division II, and Grand Rapids Christian beat them 2-1 yesterday. But it was still a good season for Liggett, like however you want to slice it.
Yeah, I mean, sure, it's tough for the kids, you know, for anybody in a team sport. That's, you know, you get that far, you get that close, and God, those poor kids on Texas. Oh God, the game against Stanford.
Oh
God.
Or Arkansas a couple years ago.
Oh, drop against Oregon State. My goodness. Yes, that was. Yeah, that was underclassman Rushman, I think, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, because they – who they had? They had the Abel kid. It was
– Yep, Kevin. Kevin
yeah,
Abel. It was – They also had Luke Heimlich.
Oh, that's right. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Sorry. Sorry, everyone. Yeah.
See, is he off in Japan minor leagues with Trevor Bauer right now? I don't know what happened with Luke Heimlich.
There's a funny story. I won't name the org because, like, you could draw the line, but, like –
It's the Royals.
No. No, this is a different story. Different story. But there was an org whose area scout, like as the tweet came out about the Heimlich situation, like as the news broke for the first time, this organization's area scout was literally in the middle of presenting the player to the draft room, like as they were doing the draft meetings, and had like a huge makeup grade on it. like,
oh no,
elite kid, yeah, like hard worker, makes his teammates better, everything, this, that, and the other thing under the sun, sits down, and two of the other area guys who were sitting next to him just kind of leaned over and showed him the tweet, and he was just like, oh no, like
head in hands. Well, like, yeah, like
but he didn't get in trouble or anything, still gainfully employed as a scout. Yeah. So like I'm not gonna say who it was, obviously, but yeah, that's a tough way to find out.
Yeah. You know, well, yeah, you can do your makeup digs and everything and you get nothing but good comments, but you never know, like God. No. We're going completely off the rails here, but I was just
I was watching
at my buddy's house. We were watching the documentary on Jared from Subway, and it's like, oh no. Like imagine being a company and making this dude the face of your company, and then you find out that he's got this underground. Anyway,
yeah,
I'm going off the rails. Ryan, you give us plenty of time. I appreciate you coming on here. Give some people, heads up on what's coming for PG. What do you guys got?
A lot of stuff coming, obviously, as we rush down the track here towards the draft. We always rank however many players there are that will be drafted. That's kind of our thing. So however many picks in the draft there are, that's how many players we rank for it. And then we write reports on every single one of those players for the draft. So you will have 600 plus, 616 it was one year. I don't know what it is this year, whatever. You'll have that many draft reports to read from us, myself as well as the rest of the draft team at PG. We'll have a couple mocks on the way, one, at least two, like one soon and then one the day of, obviously. Plenty of stuff. We're rolling in a big way for 2024 and beyond right now. We have a guy who's on Cape Cod. He's blowing up Twitter, tweeting about 2023s and 2024s from Cape Cod because MLB has screwed up the draft timing so badly that we have to scout both. So, you know,
well, in the first
we're
year,
trying to scout two classes is what we're doing. Yeah, but
well, you know, a couple of years ago, we were trying to watch the Futures game with Pork and Green while watching the draft.
This seems
you're not doing this right. This just on no, young players.
This is wrong. Yeah,
but at least they've got changed that to where
yes.
How many rounds will Brian project? Well, they're 20 rounds. I was just looking to see I don't see the order past like the third or fourth round once the top picks get out there. But yeah, you're looking at a lot of picks this year. And it's like I said, if you guys, if you're interested in the draft and somehow aren't following Brian, you really should, because he's tweeting out information lightning quick about every single player who gets drafted, at least in the first few rounds. I don't know if you try to get them all in the late round.
Then my fingers get tired. Yeah. rest assured that this is my solemn oath when it comes to the draft coverage. I got something on most everyone, even if it's not a full eval. I got something on most everyone. It's usually like the sixth or seventh round until someone pops up I've never heard of. And it's a college senior I wouldn't have known about anyways, or whatever. But
always from a college of arts and sciences or something.
Yeah, like Oklahoma Arts and Sciences Coliseum University. I don't know. Yeah. You know, like, well, he was hurt, though. Some scout saw a bullpen, and we decided to take him in the seventh round. Okay, well, how would I have known about that?
Yeah, but no, it's the Wilmer Flores, you know, had he been drafted. Had that draft been longer, somebody would have taken Wilmer Flores. And it's like, what? Yep. Wilmer, all right. Who was it? It was Evan Carter was kind of a shock, but I'm sure you had stuff on him, but it was like we didn't picture him in the first round.
That was number one. That was like the first ever, like, or since my very early days, like that was like the first time in this current stretch of draft process where it was like an early pick. And I was like, who?
Yeah, I mean, it's the closest you're going to get to like a Tone Ash scenario. Like, yes. You found this guy in the sugarcane fields? What?
Dude, and it's only because of COVID. That's the only reason. Because guys who were hideouts never were found. If you know, you could hide guys out if you saw them early, because early was the only time we had to scout in the spring. So like it was, if you had a guy that nobody else knew about on March 1st, that you had a guy that nobody else knew about on July 1st most of the time. And that's the only time it'll ever happen, unless we have another pandemic. But you know,
Well, we're gonna hold out, hope that doesn't happen.
Fingers crossed.
Andrew Miller said, "What's the website?"
It's perfectgame.org. www.perfectgame.org. That's click on the draft tab and you'll find all of our stuff there.
All right, Brian. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good evening. Again, Brian Sikowski from Perfect Game, National Cross Checker, all your draft needs. I think we're going to try to get you on around the draft time too, but I know you're super busy and it just depends. So, thanks, man. And have a good rest of your evening.
Appreciate you having me on, man. Thank you, buddy.
Yep. See ya. See ya. All right. So now it's still just me. You know, the draft talk's gone away. It's not going to be quite as fun, but great to have Brian on. Like I said, you know, he's got a breadth of knowledge that not many can match, and it's helps with the draft. And just our luck, the Tigers probably won't draft anybody we talked about there. But if they do, you can always come back to this and look and say, hey, that's what to think about. But so now we're going to, you know, switch gears, try to get through the week that was in the Tigers minor league system. I know there's some earlier questions about that, too, that I'll try to go back and get. But I'm also going to try to do this thing. So Raj, you know, he normally runs the whole show because he has all the setup. He has all the drops. He has all the various video accoutrements. And I'm trying to get the slides here that he puts together, right? You know, the little slides for each show. So what I'm going to try to do here is I'm going to try to share my screen. Sorry, yeah, just bear with me, guys, because I'm not sure what I'm doing. Let's see, settings, visual. No, that's not what I want. But, well, you know what? You guys could just imagine it, I suppose, while I'm talking about this, if you want. We'll start up in Toledo with the Mud Hens, who actually went 4-2 this week against Lehigh Valley. It was their first series win since mid-April when they beat Columbus, I think 5-1. They've been on a really rough stretch of bad luck, if you will. And, you know, and one of the things we talked about and what we noticed since the beginning of the year is basically the team has gone as Parker Meadows and Justin Henry Malloy have gone. And wouldn't you know it, this past week, they played pretty well. Parker Meadows went 11-for-28 with 3 doubles and 2 homers, 2 walks and 9 strikeouts, a few more strikeouts than you like to see, but it was an 11.47 OPS. That'll work. And Justin Henry Malloy went 8-for-25 with a triple and a home run, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts, and 9.13 OPS. You know, not the kind of the crazy numbers we've seen from Malloy, but you know, good enough to help him go 4-2. And then they also got some backup from Andre Lipsius, who went 7-for-21 with 2 doubles for 7.77 OPS. And then Joe Rizzo, one of the newcomers, has kind of filled in nicely. You know, he was performing pretty poorly in the Marlins system, but he's come here and played well. 7-for-21, a double, a home run, 9.15 OPS last week. So the offense was there. And then they got some pitching from kind of helped to bring in some big leaguers, right? You got somebody as Michael Myers finally getting pitching with Scooble and Manning. It probably helped out. It's true, it did. We got Scooble went 3 innings, 1 hit, 5 strikeouts. Manning, 3 innings, 5 hits, and 1 earned run in the rehab. You can watch Manning's last start. We put it on our Twitter account if you want to see his whole outing. And, you know, 5 hits doesn't sound great, but most of them were kind of bloops or seeing eye singles. He pitched pretty well in that game. So that was nice to see. And Bo Brisky pitched 3 times this week. 3 games, 3.1 innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. What they wanted to do, they had him go 1 game, then they wanted him to go and do a sit down, right? So pitch 1 inning, sit for the half inning, then come back and pitch again. And he hit his next out, and they wanted to pitch him back to back. And they did that fine. So it wouldn't shock me if Bo Brisky is up in Detroit this week. He looks fine. He's throwing 97. Breaking ball is still iffy, but the changeup's there. So, yeah, he looks good. And then we also had a pretty darn good week from Jack O'Loughlin, who, you know, we talked about this when they sent him from high A to triple A. You don't do that with prospects, generally speaking, right? You do that with OR guys. But I think O'Loughlin's somewhere in between that, where – and I think they're still developing him as a prospect, but they also viewed him as a guy that maybe that jump wouldn't necessarily be harmful. You know, he might get beat around a little bit. If he does, it's no big deal. But so far, he's held his own. So it's nice to see. And I expect there will be some promotions from Erie to Toledo here in the next week or so, next couple weeks of arms. And O'Loughlin will probably go down to Erie and fill in there for the rest of the year, but definitely encouraging to see him do that for, you know, it's kind of just an unexpected promotion. So good stuff there from Toledo. I don't know if anybody has any Toledo specific questions, if you want to throw them in here. Yeah, nice to see Toledo finally get back on the winning side of things after, I don't know, 6-7 consecutive series where they either lost or tied. So we'll move on from Toledo then to Erie. And I've seen a couple of questions, Stan, in there about is the Erie is their season coming, you know, it's the first half of the Eastern League season ending this week. And yes, it is. This is the final series of the first half. And right now, Erie's in pretty good position. They got a 1.5 game lead over Akron. And I believe it's a 2 game lead over Altoona now. So that's good to see. I'm not trying to see that they went 4-2 against Harrisburg, and they're at Hartford for the next series. That Hartford Yard Goats, the affiliate of the Rockies. So you really just gotta hope that they, you know, go 3-3, got a good chance of winning. You got you know, you go 4-2, you're probably there. You just gotta go whole court here and hope that the pitching continues. So we got Mitchell right here. I will show this question. Which Erie pitcher gets called up to Toledo first? It wouldn't shock me if we see Sawyer Gibson Long called up first. He's kind of the elder statesman in that group. He's pitched pretty well all year long. And we've heard that Scott Harris likes him. You know, how much he likes him, I don't know. And the interesting thing about Gibson Long is he has just been dominant against right-handed hitters this year. I think the OPS was like 550 all season, but he was getting kind of beat up by left-handed hitters. It was like a 950 OPS. It was like a 400-point difference. And they actually held him out for a start to try to work on a cutter. Now, I've been watching the starts. I haven't seen it really, but the numbers are still there. So if they feel like there's progress there, yeah, it wouldn't shock me if he gets bumped up. The other one, more likely candidate would be Grant Herter, the lefty. Although he had one of his worst outings of the year just the other day, where he gave up, I don't want to say, 4 runs in the first inning and had to. He basically hit the pitch limit. They won't let guys throw more than 30 pitches. So he was done after one inning. But given his entire body of work in the first half, it wouldn't shock me at all if he gets bumped up. You know, honestly, you know, a lot of these guys, we can see them moving up. Wilmer Flores has been pitching much better of late. This week he went 6 innings, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. No runs, so that's good to see. And just in general, we talked about his stuff. I talked with Jerry last week. His stuff has been getting better and better. But the whole pitching staff down there is just pitching pretty well. Kader Montero, 6 innings, 9 strikeouts. He really, when he's on, he looks really good. He's had a couple of rough outings, but other than that, he's been great. Ty Madden wasn't strong again, but he's, you know, 5 1/3, 3 earned runs. Nothing to write home about, but he's not also getting blown up. He's just kind of been stagnating, I guess, that's the word I keep using for him this year. It just kind of looks the same as he has for most of the season. But the pitching there remains strong. And the offense was pretty good this week. And they seem to love hitting down in Harrisburg. Maybe it's they like being in the capital. But, Diego Rincones is a guy we haven't talked about a ton this year. He was a minor league free agent. Got him from the San Francisco system. So we assume that Scott Harris was familiar with him and liked him. But this week, he went 6-for-23 with 3 home runs. He had 2 all year coming into the season. 6 RBI, 944 OPS. So he was providing both, you know, 2 of those home runs came in one game. He was really giving him some pop lately. And he's a guy that I used to compare him to, like, you know, for lack of a better term, I called him Fat Harold Castro. And he's not fat. I just mean he's bigger. You know, Castro is a smaller guy because he doesn't really take a lot of walks, but he also doesn't strike out a lot. He swings the bat, puts the bat on the ball. And he looks like a guy who could hit 30-plus home runs just in his build, but it doesn't work out that way. I think it swings too much. But great week for him. Good to see. Dylan Dingler had a terrific week. 6-for-14, a home run, 4 RBIs, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts. Damn near 1,200 OPS, which is good to see. You know, he's a guy that he has a lot of ups and downs, but this week he looked good. But the story kind of this week, aside from some of the good pitching, was the two guys they brought up from High A West Michigan, Justice Bigby and Chris Myers. You know, we put out a tweet a couple weeks ago about the Tigers leaders in a lot of categories, and those two were leading in OPS plus or WRC plus by a pretty wide margin. It's like 30 points higher than Colt Keith. And everybody was like joking, like, oh, these guys are in High A. What are they doing in High A? Well, the Tigers bumped them up. And they both produced this week at a high rate. I'm trying to look at the numbers right here. So Bigby went 9-for-23 with 2 doubles, 2 walks, 940 OPS. Chris Myers was 8-for-17. So those guys combined to go 17-for-40. That'll work. 350 average. I think that's what that is. Myers had a double, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. So really a lot of production from those two, and they really strengthened the lineup. Nice to see. And then, you know, Colt Keith, all anybody ever wants to talk about is Colt Keith, right? And by Colt Keith standards, kind of a down week. and he missed a couple games. We know he's nursing what appears to be a sore arm. But 4 for 17, a couple of home runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. He had a little bit of a skid there in between getting a hit today. He had gone 0 for 10. But, yeah, 0 for 10 is about as bad as you'll see Cole Keith, so I don't think we're too worried about that. And that about wraps it up for that team. We did, Rogelio did highlight on the slide, Blake Holub, who we've talked about a little bit. 4 innings pitched, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts, no earned runs. He hasn't given up a run yet in Double A. Relief arm that's really moving through the system because the stuff is nasty. So good to see him continuing to produce. I don't know if there were any. Let's see. So Sergio asked if Myers and Bigby are legit prospects we should take seriously. You know, that's a tough one to say. And I would say that they both have some interesting tools, that specifically with their bats. They're both, I would say fringe average to average hitters. Myers is a left-handed hitting first baseman type. Bigby was a first baseman in college. He's more of a corner outfielder in pro ball. Bigby in particular, I guess they both did. They both show kind of surprising opposite field power. But, you know, it's just tough to say. Like, I don't see the tools popping out there where, like, oh, this guy's a 60 hitter, this guy's got 60 power. They kind of remind me a little bit of Josh Lester, if you will. Like, just really good minor league hitters who, for whatever reason, might not have the ability to succeed at the higher levels, the highest levels. But all you can do with these guys, and I felt the same way about Kerry Carpenter, to be honest, when he was in Double A, I'm like, well, you know, he's probably just one of these guys who's really good at Double A. What you can do is you got to keep playing the guys and see how they perform. And if Bigby and Myers keep hitting like this at Double A, then maybe bump on up to Triple A at the end of the year, next year, if they keep hitting, who knows? They just, you know, they don't strike me as guys who have those tools that you just have to project to be pluses in the big leagues. They're performers right now, and that's the best I can say about them. I'm not a scout. I kind of fall back into the, well, there's got to be a reason these guys were taken in the 13th and 19th round, respectively. But that's maybe that's a fallacy there. Maybe I'm appealing to authority that shouldn't be there. So we'll see. But it was happy to see them produce, and maybe they'll continue doing it. So let's see. All right. Colt hit homers in 4 straight games. He did, with a couple games off in between. But that was, you know, he's good. Okay, he's a good hitter. People always ask when he's going up. I don't know. We thought he was going to get a call up soon. We thought he'd get a call up when Erie's, you know, secured a playoff spot. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. It feels a little bit like from the comments we're getting now from Hinch and Harris when they talk is they almost, it feels like they want to overcook these players, if you will. Whereas they felt like maybe Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson were a little bit undercooked when they got to the big leagues. And that's going to happen. There's going to be development that happens, that has to happen at the big league level. You have to be able to adjust to the best players on the planet. But maybe they felt there was more stuff that could have been accomplished in the minors before they came up. I don't know. But so it seems like that's the way they're going. Maybe they feel like there's no particular rush with a 21-year-old. I don't know. We don't have any inside info on that yet. We wish we did. Maybe Scott Harris loves Cole Keith and wants him to start the year in the big leagues next year so they can get an extra pick when he wins Rookie of the Year. I don't know. But moving on, we're bumping down from Erie. Let's go see what West Michigan did. Now, they had a 3-3 week at Lake County. I committed a blunder. I thought in the past you couldn't see Lake County games on my LBTV. And so I missed the first couple of games of the week because you can see them now. I thought for sure that it was one of the only places where you couldn't, but so I missed some interesting action there. And also they had a lot of rainouts this week. So a lot of games were pushed around, but they ended up having a decent week, and they were kind of led by, who is it? It was, I got the slide coming up, Brady Allen, you know, the minor league, the guy they got for Jonathan Davis, who's been playing well for the Marlins. Brady Allen, kind of an OR guy as well. But if you look, Brady Allen's stats this year are almost identical to Jace Young's, like across the board. I think Allen's like a year older, but they're both hitting for power, getting on base at a decent clip. And yeah, he had a heck of a week. He went 8 for 21 to a double, 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, a 13.15 OPS. I didn't check, but maybe player of the week in the Midwest League. Not sure. But those numbers are pretty good. Anytime you get 3 home runs and 9 RBIs, that's pretty close. But the other name that was really nice to see performing well this week was Isaac Pacheco. It's been a struggle for him for 5-6 weeks now, but he went 6-for-18, 3 doubles, 2 home runs, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts, a 1233 OPS. That's kind of what we were hoping to see out of him. And I think it helps that Lake County's kind of a smaller park, but he was spraying the ball all over the place and looking good. So that was nice to see. Danny Ceretti continues to be just kind of steady. Steady Ceretti, I suppose we call him, if you want to. 4-for-15, a home run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts, 856 OPS. Roberto Campos had a strong week in some regards. He went 8-for-24, which is great, like 333, right? But only 2 doubles, 7 RBI, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. That's kind of unusual for him, a 737 OPS. He controls the strike zone a little bit better than you'd expect. So, you know, I don't know. You give a little, you get a little there with hitting 333, but not getting on base otherwise. And then there are just a couple other players down there worth mentioning. Troy Melton got his first professional win the other day. 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs, a walk, 7 strikeouts. He continues his ascent. I think you could argue for him maybe as a top 20 prospect in the system now. Just he still needs to continue to refine breaking balls, but he's learning how to pitch in professional baseball, and that's fun to see. Let's see. Carlos Pena had a strange game today. 6 innings, only 1 hit, but gave up 2 earned runs, two hit batters, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. His control issues have been kind of befuddling this year, but because he's a touch and feel guy, but I think it's basically he ran into some issues where he was getting hit hard. When that happens, some guys get a little shy of throwing in the strike zone, and you can see Brian Pena, who will typically he doesn't get in a lot of guys' faces, but you'll see him challenge Carlos Pena. Maybe it's because they share the same last name. I don't know. But he challenges him sometimes, and I don't know if it works out well. But it was a bit of a rough week for, at least with control-wise, for Pena. And the other name I wanted to highlight was Tyler Madison, who had gone on the injured list and just came back. But he got an interesting situation the other night where he had gave up. It was a tight game, I think 4-3 at the time. And he gave up 2 singles to start the inning, and then just turned it into overdrive. It was just firing the ball past. He got up to 98, 3 straight strikeouts. He got out of a jam that he kind of created on his own, and that was really impressive to see, because that's going to be his role going forward, is kind of a flamethrower out of the bullpen, and you like to see guys succeed in their role. We got a question here. Does West Michigan still get huge crowds? They do. It depends on what you mean by huge, but I think I want to say that they are second in attendance in the Midwest League behind Dayton. I think Dayton usually has pretty big crowds, but yeah, they tend to get, you know, on the weekend, you might get 3,000-4,000, if not more, I think. We've been there for some pretty large crowds. Jackson Jobe's debut last year was a particularly big, raucous crowd. It's a great atmosphere for a baseball game, and it's only going to get better as their renovations continue. So here's a good question. Mitchell Stachnik. Does Jung replace, well, I said that name last, does Jace Jung replace Colt Keith and Erie whenever he gets called up? Possibly. I want to talk about Jace Jung again. I didn't mention him here, but people probably want to know what happened. What is his stats? I think he went 3-for-23 this week. 2 home runs, but only 1 other hit. 3 walks, 8 strikeouts, 622 OPS. Just, it feels like whenever he's appears to be turning a corner, he kind of has a week like this. And I've been kind of harsh with Jace Jung because of the looks. Just whenever we see him, he doesn't seem to be performing terribly well. And there's just some aspects of him swinging and missing at pitches in the zone that worries me for the future. And you can look at his numbers, and it's like a 140 OPS or WRC plus. Like he's really performing well. And a lot of that is driven by the walks and the power, which is great. You'd love to see that. But I always get a little bit worried when college hitters aren't also hitting for a high average. Now, you know, we've all learned that the batting average doesn't mean much on its own. But there's kind of it's kind of a mirage at the big league level. But there's also kind of a mirage you get in the minor leagues where you get these WRC pluses that look great. And it's because guys are walking and hitting for power. We saw it with Christian Santana last year with 215, but had like a 120 WRC plus because he walked a ton and hit for some power. And you can go to Fangraphs and you could filter down and you'd search for 22-year-olds like Jace Jung with 200-plus plate appearances and a strikeout rate north of 25%. And there's a lot of them, and there are only about five big leaguers on there. And that worries me a little bit. I just would love to see his strikeouts come down a little bit and his contact rate go up in the zone more, hit for some more average. Maybe there's the stuff behind the scenes that I'm missing where he's going to get better at that, but it still worries me. So I don't know. At a certain point, I do think he's going to get promoted to Erie just because, but I don't know. And I've talked about this before, but he gives me kind of Kristen Stewart vibes where it's the power is great. The walks are great. I just worry about there's contact being there. So I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully he'll pull out of this and make me look foolish next week and in the coming weeks and really start knocking the cover off the ball. But I'm a little bit worried. So let's move. We'll move on down to Lakeland, the Flying Tigers. They went 3-3 this week. Next week, they're at Bradenton. You know, it's tough. Tough sledding down there. Not a ton of prospects to speak of. They did have a great week from their combined catchers, Sergio Tapia and Moises Valero. They went 7-for-14 with three doubles, five RBIs. We saw some performance from Luke Gold. He's played better of recent. I think he was their fifth round pick last year, I would say. 5-for-13, a double, three walks, 962 OPS. Dom Johnson, the speedy guy, outfielder, 4-for-13, three walks, two steals, three strikeouts. The young infielders, though, Abel Bastidas, only 4-for-21, did have a pair of doubles, no walks, six strikeouts. That's a little bit worrisome. Santana, who I was just talking about, 3-for-14. He's gotten his average up to like 118 on the season, but it's still, you know, awfully low. Three walks and five strikeouts. Peyton Graham went 5-for-19 with three walks and five strikeouts and a steal. And then we got some interesting pitchers. Connor Holden, I think fresh off his Florida State League Pitcher of the Week, had another solid outing. Five innings, three hits, only one earned run, two walks, seven strikeouts. That's good to see. Continues pitching well. Carlos Marcano is an interesting name that Rogelio and I have talked about a little bit because he was one of the youngest pitchers in the Florida State League last year. And, you know, age is always kind of an interesting thing. When you see an organization challenge a really young guy, you think they must think highly of him. And he worked mostly out of the bullpen last year, but he's moved into the rotation, and he had a really great start last week. And this week, five innings, two hits, one on run, four strikeouts. He's an interesting arm. You know, he's kind of limited by his own physical build. He's only about 6'1", 180 pounds, but he's gotten a little bit more athletic, thrown a little bit harder, and he's got a pretty good changeup and a decent breaking ball. So just a name to remember as maybe some guy who will sneak into prospect list down the road just because, you know, he's performing now. all right, here. Well, let's have some fun. We got some questions here. Andrew Miller says Santana isn't a prospect, in my opinion. You're free to have that opinion. He's still only 19 years old. He's a guy who walks a lot. He's got some thump in the bat. He's not a shortstop, so that's going to take him down a rung. And he's an okay second baseman. So, yeah, you just got to hope that you know, because he's so young that he's eventually going to develop. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's tough to get super excited about a guy who is a career 200 hitter in low A ball, right? And now Sean Michael says, did I miss Chris's apology to Spencer Torkelson? I have not apologized to Spencer Torkelson. I will not apologize to Spencer Torkelson because Torkelson has been far worse than I ever projected him to be. I compared him to Rhys Hoskins. I thought he would be a Rhys Hoskins player. Rhys Hoskins is like a 125 to 130 WRC plus. Spencer Torkelson has been very good lately. He looks good. I'm hoping he keeps it up. It's been great. His WRC plus is still 99 to 100 on the year. In a career, it's like 80. If he keeps this up, it's going to keep climbing, and I will be happy to apologize. I want to see it more, but I'm just happy to see him performing because he was looking scary there for a little bit, right? Like, you know, like the name Torkelson's going to haunt the franchise for a while. But he seems to be picking things up. And we didn't even talk about it. The Tigers had a pretty awesome series win this weekend at Minnesota. So hard to be upset about that. And they really, you know, the offense in June went into that, you know, hibernation, but didn't seem to have any trouble against Minnesota. And they did it against some good pitchers too, right? Joe Ryan, Sonny Gray. So got to feel pretty good about that. See, and Torque's been driving it. Miggy's been hitting well. Baez is playing well. Ibanez is back to hitting. It's nice to see. So definitely progress, as Sean Michael says there. But, yeah, I think I finished up. The only other name I wanted to mention for the Flying Tigers in Lakeland was Colin Fields, who I think has come up from the Complex League. two games, 3 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. Just, you know, finding some guys who put up some numbers this week. It could be a little bit tough in the Florida State League. And we'll finish off here with the rookie leagues. And there's some things to talk about here. I guess the first thing we want to talk about, of course, is Jackson Job returning to action in the Florida Complex League. 2 perfect innings, 4 strikeouts. Really encouraging. Now, you know, there are a couple things about that are encouraging to me. Number one, that they gave him 2 innings, which suggests that he might go 3 in his next outing, and then 4, and then 5. And you know what? If he's doing that, he's probably going to be back starting games within the next month, which is honestly a little bit quicker than I expected. You know, with backs, I always get worried. So just good to see. And then it's awesome to see that he went out there and dominated, right? Like, it's good to get him back on the mound no matter what. But it sure would be nice if he, you know, became that arm that everybody was dreaming of. And there were, you know, we talked about this before, but before he went down with injury, or right after he went down with injury, AJ Hinch said, you know, it's a real bummer because he had been doing everything we hoped he would do and expected of him to do, which made me think, you know, it's not saying a ton, but it made me think that, like, yeah, he had taken a step up. They were excited about his potential this year. And we saw it at the end of last year. He was a better pitcher at the end of last year than he was at the beginning of the year, because it's a guy who hasn't pitched a ton, just the way it is. And it's kind of wild to think that, you know, AJ Smith Chaver, who's pitching for the Braves right now, was taken in the same draft as Jackson Job. He's actually 3 months younger than Jackson Job. He's already in the big leagues. Now, that was super quick ascent from a guy kind of like Jackson Job who hadn't pitched a ton. With Chaver, it was a guy who he was a quarterback and just, you know, gave up. He was basically going to give up pitching to play football, but then football got shut down during COVID. And so he just kind of went back to throwing. And they saw him and like, hey, that's good. So, any event, great to see Joe back. Looking forward to seeing what he does in his next couple outings. Somebody asked earlier if there's video. That at some point, their, you know, the player development account would have some video. We've seen video from the SCL from them before. Roberto Campos hit a home run in his first career SCL at bat, and they put that out. But maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But that's good to see. There are some performances down there in Florida, too, that I think are worth noticing. And the one guy I want to mention is the catcher, Josue Briseño, who he went 7-for-18 last week with 2 doubles, a home run, 8 RBIs, at 10-12 OPS so far in the Florida Complex League. Now, you know, numbers in the rookie leagues don't mean a whole lot. But you look at Briseño, and he was one of their bigger signings last year. He's an 18-year-old, and he's a big kid. He's 6'4", probably 200-pound now, catcher. And the way he's performing so far, you have to be kind of encouraged by that. So he's just a name I think people might want to remember. Because we were looking at Dominican Summer League stats last year, and it was Raylan Perez was really tearing everything up. He's off to a rough start this year in the Florida Complex League, but Briseño was playing well last year, too. It just wasn't as loud as Perez. But so far, it's been awfully loud for him in the Complex League, so that's exciting. You have Andrew Jenkins kind of rehabbing down there, 9-for-14. That's a bit much. That's a college guy playing against a bunch of teenagers. He probably needs to go back to Lakeland. Denwaris De La Cruz was a guy who I think he won the OPS title, if such a thing exists, in the Florida Complex League a couple of years back. We've seen him in spring training a couple of times. He's just kind of been staying at that level, catcher. He went 6-for-10 with 3 doubles and a homer. Samuel Gill, or Hill, again, I don't know how it's pronounced. Another guy from the signing class of last year, 6-for-16 with a triple, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. He's a guy that, by the sounds of it, even when they were signing him, he sounded more like a Sergio Alcantara type, right? Like a more of a glove-first infielder with some field to hit. Probably not a ton of power, but you know, there's some value in guys like that if you can, you know, they play really good defense. And then we'll go head down to the DSL. We got Angel Cruz, 7-for-14 with a couple home runs. He's an older first baseman, probably, you know, not much to think of there. And then some younger guys who are interesting. Santiago Pinto went 5-for-12. He's only 17. He had a home run, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, and a steal. An outfielder. Again, the Dominican Summer League stats don't tell us anything, really. But all things being equal, we like good stats more than bad stats. My friend Yerber Montilla, one of my favorite names in the system. He's a really athletic, dynamic type of player. He's his second year in the DSL. Went 5-for-21 with a double, a triple, a homer, 3 walks, a steal. You can just kind of get the picture for a guy who's hitting for the cycle during the week. It's probably a little bit fun to watch. And then you got Anibal Salas, who is a 17-year-old, 4-for-17, a double. What's interesting about him, seems to be showing a good eye. 6 walks, 7 strikeouts, 2 steals. So just, these are young guys, the names that don't mean a whole lot right now, but who knows, a couple years down the road, maybe they're among the Tigers, the top 30 prospects. And a couple pitchers, Yosper Sanchez had 9 strikeouts in 3 2/3 innings last week. And then Duque Hebert, everybody is still liking him from the World Baseball Classic. 5 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. Pretty strong week for him. He's pitching well so far in the league. So that's like, 40 minutes of stats talk. Hopefully you guys didn't hate it without the visuals. Kind of more of a traditional podcast here, I suppose, than a visual podcast. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a typical week in the minor league system. You got some impressive performances from guys you want. Some other guys having rough weeks. We'll reevaluate down the road. But I don't know if anybody else has any questions in the chat. Now seems like a good time to get to them. Otherwise, we'll probably get out of here. I don't know if, like I said, anybody, I'll give you guys a minute or two if there's something you think of that you want to mention. If not, hopefully, we'll certainly see you guys on Thursday. Although I didn't miss last Thursday's show with the Motor City Metrics. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. It's been a while since I've never actually done a solo video show. I used to do solo podcasts occasionally when I was doing the Locked On thing, but it can be a little bit tough. Hope I'm not talking too fast and so forth like that. But yeah, if nobody has any questions, we'll see you either tomorrow night or Thursday for the Motor City Metrics. And like I said, good Tigers series win. Pulling for Erie this week to clinch that playoff spot, and then maybe cross your fingers you get Colt Keith moving up, just so people can relax a little bit and feel the progress, even though I'm sure it's going just fine. But yeah, we'll see. So anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in tonight. Thanks again to Brian Sikowski from Perfect Game. He's awesome. Thanks to Raj. Thanks to all the guys out there who had a good Father's Day, and anybody who's tuning in. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.